This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
It is. You're listening to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have you with us. Dave Kellner and Mike Grenham here in the studio. If you aren't aware already, I'm sure you are, Europe have returned the Ryder Cup.
Did they?
Mr. Grenham. 16.5 points to 11.5 points. It was easy in Gleneagles in the end for Paul McGinley's side. Jamie Donaldson with the winning points. Justin Rose, the big winner this week. He was top point scorer, top European point scorer. A little bit of a shock on the American side with rookie Patrick Reed. 3.5 points he got, and he was the leading American point scorer. All in all, a successful, profitable and entertaining week of golf. The 2014 Ryder Cup is Europe's once again, Mike.
Yes, and we're particularly happy that Justin Rose was top European point scorer. And had a little bit on the top overall as well. Did you back him the top overall?
No.
Yeah, that was a bit lucky because Hunter Mahan letting him off the hook on the 18th. What was he doing on the 18th? That meant that Rose got a half and finished half a point ahead of Reed. You're going to ask me, what about Tom Watson, aren't you?
I'm going to ask you a lot of things.
Oh, go on, then.
Mike, in this
one
podcast.
At a time. Fire on.
We'll start off with the captains because they were always going to play a pivotal part, as they often do in the Ryder Cup. Paul McGinley, captain for Europe. Tom Watson, captain for America. How do you assess their role in the 2014 Ryder Cup, their part that they played?
Very simply, McGinley did very well and Watson didn't.
Yep.
That's it. I mean, McGinley got it all right, pretty much. A couple of things I might have done differently if I was him. But, you know, the players really seemed to be with him, didn't they? And that he just doesn't seem the same with Watson, who just seemed very remote from the players and just didn't listen to them, which is remarkable in this day and age.
It's always the key in the Ryder Cup to players part of a team, individuals as part of a team. There was definitely a disconnect with the American team. Paul McGinley planned everything meticulously and had all the players not only buy into his philosophy but understand it as well and understand why he was making the decisions when he made them. Graham McDowell, for instance, disappointed that he didn't play either of the two mornings but understood he was going to be leading the line in the singles, and Paul McGinley made sure that he played with Victor Dubuis on in the Open de France earlier on in the year to get to know this rookie. They formed a formidable partnership. Tom Watson didn't even know who he'd put in the place of Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth on Friday afternoon when he was asked. So Paul McGinley had a plan. Tom Watson was doing things on the hoof.
Yeah, Watson just got it wrong. I feel sorry for him in some ways because he's a bit of a legend of the game. Well, he is a legend of the game. But his captaincy was very, very, very average, if not poor. Some of his decisions were unfathomable, I would have said. And certainly you can't be, someone like Phil Mickelson's begging to play in an afternoon match as he hasn't played all day Saturday. You just don't reply with no on a text. You've got to do it better than that. You're just not going to bring people with you, are you? And then I didn't think Mickelson was quite as scathing as some people were making out in the press conference, because he was answering a question about Haizinger and Valhalla and related it to the last three Ryder Cups, not just that one, including one that would have been, I imagine he's a friend of Davis Love, when Davis Love's a captain, wasn't he? So he wasn't just aiming it at Tom Watson, albeit it was a little awkward, but I think he was telling the truth. The whole thing was a bit of a shambles from an American perspective, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And he was asked about how to remedy it, and he was asked about the 2008 Ryder Cup,
and he answered the question. He said he thought it worked because they won.
I haven't seen the actual interview. I've only read the transcript.
I've seen it. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Maybe it came across differently in vision with the audio. But
everyone who was there seemed to think it was quite brutal, but okay, when you watched it on video and didn't have the electricity in the room, it wasn't quite as bad, I didn't think. And he actually said, Mickelson, oh no, sorry, I didn't mean it to be having a go at Watson. He actually said that in the conference, but journalists don't want to know that, do they? They want to have nothing. It's a great story, isn't it? You know, Mickelson and Watson falling out. I think what Mickelson said was maybe it wasn't the right time to some degree, but he was asked an honest question and gave an honest answer. And we always moan about people not doing that in the media and sport, and so it was refreshing in some ways. I think they need to have captains that are more in touch with the players.
I was just about to say that they need a younger captain next time round. They need younger vice captains next time round as well. People that aren't detached from the modern game, and the people that were involved in the American Ryder Cup this time were detached, as far as I could tell. And playing Jimmy Walker and Ricky Fowler together, four times, and then the singles, they were absolutely shattered on Saturday afternoon.
Remarkable.
And got annihilated, really. Jimmy Walker, I mean, he did incredibly well to come back and win his singles match, because he looked like he'd never held a golf club on Saturday afternoon. And to make that decision to rest Bradley and Mickelson, I think the problem was you'd have Bradley and Mickelson playing the four balls, but once he decided not to play them in the four balls in the morning, hands were tied behind his back, and he thought, I'm not going to send them out in the foursomes in the afternoon.
Just made mistake after mistake, didn't he? I mean, playing the Fowler and Walker in particular, five times. Ricky Fowler, by the way, has yet to win a Ryder Cup match in two events. So it just didn't add up on any... Look, it was a disaster for Watson. He got it all wrong. Virtually everything he got wrong. The only good thing that the American team did was put Reed and Spieth together, but I'm led to believe that was Steve Stricker's kind of guidance. It just went wrong for him. Europe have a very strong team, though, Dave, let's not forget. So, and some of their players, like Justin Rose, who, thankfully for us, as we both batted him, he played out of his skin. You know, you know, there was that as well. You know, on the course, the Europeans played better, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely, and that it all boils down. A lot of it boils down to that in the end. You can't put a percentage on how much the captains matter.
No,
but the European players did play better.
I don't think Watson's captaincy cost America the Ryder Cup.
No,
I don't think it helped, and it certainly probably shipped a couple of points maybe the other way. But Europe were just playing that a little bit better, sharper, weren't they? I think
he'd be my next captain, by the way.
Who?
Steve Stricker.
Yeah,
I think if he wanted the job, he's the man to lead America, a level-headed guy who gets on well with the players and is respected by his peers.
Mm.
I'm not saying Tom Watson isn't respected by his peers. Everyone knows that he's got an incredible resume in the game, but maybe not as known to these modern-day players as someone like Steve Stricker for instance. So he'd be high on the list, as would David Toms. Just before we leave the Ryder Cup, we've got quotes already, odds on, for Europe to win again in Hazeltine in 2016. There's still a lot to look forward to as far as the Americans are concerned.
Some good young players coming
their
through.
Younger players played brilliantly. Spieth and Reed were fantastic. Billy Horschel was left at home.
Yeah.
Chris Kirk in there. There's every chance, if they get things right from a management perspective, there will be...
People were saying, who would want to be the American captain? Watson, what a terrible... The next one has got a real chance, hasn't it? Because expectations are going to be low. It's in America. They've got some good young players coming through. They'll do anything they can to win, you know, in terms of when they can pick the teams and everything. So, yeah, it'd be interesting. I would say America, it might be their turn next time round.
We could talk about this for hours, but we won't, because we have a big tournament this week.
Last question.
Yep.
Who's going to be the next European captain? Who should it be?
I wouldn't have Darren Clarke.
I wouldn't either.
I think he's got too big an ego, Darren Clarke.
I'm not a fan of that decision.
I'm not a fan at all. No. I'd go with Thomas Bjorn. He would be my next European captain. It's just a gut feeling with Darren Clarke, in all honesty.
Yeah, mate, I'm with you on that, Dave. I'm surprised you said it, but I was going to say the same thing. I just don't have him as the right type of man to be a captain, but we'll see.
Yeah, so I'd go with Thomas Bjorn. A lot of people thinking Miguel Angel Jimenez is an idea. But do you think... think he might be a bit too laid back, Miguel Angel Jimenez, for the job.
He's a loon, isn't he? God, I love him, but he's... No. Thomas Bjorn's a good pick.
The Alfred Dunhill Links Championship, then, is this week's...
Back to tournament play.
Yeah, looking forward to this as well. One of the more prestigious events on the European Tour calendar.
For sure.
And we're in Scotland again for this week's championship. The event takes place on three of Scotland's finest courses, Carnoustie, King's Barnes and St Andrews. And it's a pro-am as well. So the pros and the amateurs all have a round apiece at each venue. And then the top 60 in ties get to play on the old course on Sunday afternoon. From a television coverage perspective, you get to see a lot more of the amateurs than you do the professionals for the first 3 days, and that can that can annoy a lot of regular golf spectators, can't it?
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yes, yes. I'm fed up seeing Hugh Grant, yeah, and other people like that.
Bill Murray.
Well, is he playing this year?
He is playing. God. He was out for a practice round this morning in St Andrews, so we will get to see a lot
Happy
of Bill
days.
Murray for the...
I love Groundhog Day. It's one of my favourite films.
It's I'm glad you said that, Mike, because I like it.
Do you? It's like watching Groundhog Day. Don't think watching him with his japes on the linked courses. But anyway,
yeah.
Stay to the movies, Bill.
It's something you've got to put up with, isn't it? And I know a lot of people that don't watch golf every week might enjoy seeing the amateur celebrities hack it round.
I've yet to meet one, Dave.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I've yet to meet anyone who loves that, I have to say.
As far as the event's concerned, last year David Howell beat Peter Uihlein in a playoff, and although the winning score's generally determined by the weather, Mike, four of the last five winners of the event have recorded a minimum 20 under to win because it is set up for the amateurs as well.
Yeah.
The weather is a huge factor at this event, though. The draw's a big factor as well. As far I've looked through the weather at Kings Barnes, Carnoustie and St Andrews, as far as I can tell, obviously we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, a little bit early on in the week, but you wouldn't want to be playing Carnoustie early on Thursday or late on Saturday. There could be a big draw bias this week. It's easily the toughest of the three courses.
We don't know the tee times yet, though, do we?
We don't.
So it's not much of use to us, but if people are listening in the net, this is Tuesday afternoon, UK time. I suppose people listening in the next couple of days, keep an eye on those players who are playing Carnoustie on Friday, did you say?
You don't want to be playing
Carnoustie the toughest,
early on Thursday or late on Saturday. So Friday would be nice if you're playing Carnoustie. What do you see as keys to the event, Mike?
Hitting it a long way, I don't think, harms on this event. They're very open courses, particularly St Andrews. Carnoustie maybe not so much, but they are set up, as you rightly say, for the amateurs to not look too silly. So I think length helps, and then you're going to get to 20 under in four rounds. You've got to, rather obviously, be scoring pretty well. So that's the criteria I would apply yourself.
Yeah, I think putting's the big factor here. You look back through the list of winners here, a list of guys that have made the top 10, and their putting statistics for that week always been strong. You've got to put well at this championship.
Yeah, I'd agree with that for sure. You've got to hit 20 under, you've got to be getting to. Unless the weather's very bad, someone will get to that, won't they?
Top quality field. Rory McIlroy is the 9-2 favourite. Martin Keimer 16-1. Victor Dubuisson is 22s. Charles Schwartzel is 25-1. Joost Luiten 25s. Shane Lowry 25s. Tommy Fleetwood is 25s. Paul Casey 30-1 and 33s bar. Four of the winning Ryder Cup team that actually played on the team in attendance here: McIlroy, Keimer, Dubuisson, and Gallagher. Gallagher detached from the others as far as the betting is concerned. 40-1. He played well on Sunday, didn't he? But was steamrolled by Mickelson, who had a fantastic Sunday at Glen Eagles. But that performance on the Friday morning is one that he'll want to forget. Difficult situation for Gallagher, because you want to celebrate, you're part of the team, but you didn't contribute anything.
Didn't get any points.
No, which is a shame for Stephen Gallagher.
If he'd got half, he'd have it, yeah. But Silva, he only played twice, and the first time he didn't play very well, did he? And the second time, as you say, he ran into an on-form Phil Mickelson, who was chomping at the bit to prove his point, I think. Would you?
How did you do in the matches, by the way, in terms of your own bets?
Well, I if you looked at my tweets, Dave,
I did. You'll find I retweeted some of those tweets, Mr. Grenham.
My three daily naps all won.
They did, didn't they?
They did. Yes, we had Dubuisson and G Mac to win, didn't we? Then Spieth and Reed, and then Kuchar to beat Bjorn, and they all won comfortably. I have to say, so that was happy days. It was a very good punting tournament, with the exception of Matt Kuchar, who didn't pull up any trees in the top American.
No, he didn't get his chance, did he, on the opening morning? And that was unfortunately
and
a
then
sign of
things to come.
Then
played brilliantly and met up with Rosen Stenson playing brilliantly, and he was playing out of his skin then, Kuchar. But anyway, would you be? Have you picked any Ryder Cup?
No, I was just about to ask you the same question. I've left the Ryder Cup alone. The one that
partying, weren't they?
And a bit of mental letdown, perhaps. The top three, I think, are all about the right price. I can see people going for McIlroy.
Yeah, he's the one
9-2.
Yeah, Keimer 16-1. he didn't play that brilliantly for me. I know he did well on Sunday. Dubuis on 22-1. Yeah, that's very short, isn't it, in this field?
Yeah.
McIlroy, though, at 9-2. That's the kind of price he's been for majors of late, isn't it? So, you know, he wouldn't have been much bigger for the USPGA, would he, for example? So, yeah, you could argue that's not a bad price. He hits it a mile, and if he puts well, I'm just thinking there might be a little bit of mental letdown. At 9-2, you can let him win, can't you?
Yeah, in all honesty, if I was going for one of the four, it'd be Gallagher for me.
Would it?
At 40-1, it really would, yeah. Mm. I know he will just feel... I think he will have felt slightly deflated from last week. He'll want to prove a point this week. And these conditions suit Gallagher as well, so yeah, he would be the one for me at 40s, but I've not gone for any of the four, and I'm leaving Captain Paul McGinley as well out this week. He's in the field. He's 500-1. I can ignore him
he
as well.
He could be in a match bet with Nick Faldo.
He could be in a match bet with Nick Faldo. Mike, your picks then. I've got... You know what? I'm going to...
How many have you got?
I'm pushing the boat out this week. I'm going to have four picks.
Four picks?
Which is...
Is that allowed?
It's unusual for me, isn't it, four picks?
No, we can have four, can't we?
A quarter first five. But I'm going slightly...
I've got three, so we better pick the winner, haven't we?
I'm going slightly reduced stakes, though, because
my
build-up in play.
Yeah.
My first pick is Danny Willett at 40-1. I'm going half a point each way on the Englishman. Hoping he comes into this ready. He has had those well-publicised injury problems throughout the season, which has curtailed his season ever so slightly.
Mm.
Only won the once on tour, but not only do I like his form this season, but form in this championship as well. Finished second in this event in 2010, fifth here in 2012. Got other good links finishes also. Finished 15th in the Open Championship in 2013. You look at his form this season, a whole host of top 10 finishers, and interesting finish at the Scottish Open at Royal Aberdeen as well. Finished 11th on that links venue there. Ranks 18th in putts per greens in regulation on tour this season. I think he's likely to win in the not too distant future, and I like the setup of this event for him. Since the USPGA Championship, tied 13th in the Czech Republic, shot 63-64 at the weekend in Switzerland to finish tied 5th in the European Masters, and respectable 32nd in Wales there as well. And I think that's definitely factored into this price, that slightly down the field finish in Wales, 40-1.
Yeah, he was on my list, Dave, I have to say, but the one thing you mentioned at the outset just put me off when I checked. He'd only got one tour win. I thought 42-1, I thought maybe he's just a bit short in this field. And Shane Lowry was another one who I thought, yeah, I really fancy him before I looked at the price. And I thought, 25-1, that's a bit short. And Tommy Fleetwood, probably there's a few of them. Eddie Pepperell, there's a few there at the head of the market that they're pretty short for what they've done and the amount of wins they've got, I think. I hope you haven't picked any more of them, have you?
No, I've not. No. I thought you were going to spin through all the field then and you nail one of my selections and say, I'm not with those.
Lowry,
I agree with you.
Lowry, Fleetwood, Pepperell and Willett all look very short. No, maybe Willett had... I nearly did, will it? The other three, four in particular are below 40-1.
Yeah.
Eddie Pepperell below 40-1.
He's Mark Adsett's our compiler's keep this week.
Yes,
he fancies him strongly. Eddie Pepperell does have... He's got great form at the moment, hasn't he?
Not saying he can't win, Dave, but he's a shorter price than some quite established players.
I agree with you.
And Shane is... I think Shane Lowry is a great player, but 25-1 is short in this event. Tommy Fleetwood also.
I think with Lowry's style... people always think Lynx golf and then associate that automatically with Shane Lowry, and in these sort of events why he's short.
Yeah, he did play very well here last year, but I think it's the first time he has played well here, if I remember rightly. So look, they can all win. This is about betting value, isn't it? Don't get me wrong, I'm not for a minute saying that those guys can't win. Willett being the closest of the ones I mentioned, he was very late being scratched off, so don't think I'm ruling him out by any means. He's in very good form. But my main pick is a major winner who's the same price as Shane Lowry and Tommy Fleetwood. Charles Svortsil is my headline pick in this event. Svortsil's in very good form, coming off a 12th place in the BMW in the FedEx playoffs in America. And had a host of reasonable finishes in the last few months, including top 10s in the Open, the Bridgestone, and the Memorial, and not far behind the top 10 in the USPGA. So, certainly in good enough form. Tops the rankings in Europe for putts puts in greens and regulation.
That's incredible. I couldn't believe that statistic because...
He doesn't seem like a good putter, does he?
That's his Achilles heel. It must be.
Yeah, but he's fifth on birdie average on the US Tour as well, Dave, which the US Tour being about 1,000 times better than the European Tour for statistics. On the European Tour, you get the name and how many rounds they've played, whereas in the US, you get everything, don't you? How many putts they've taken in a windy weather or something, I don't know. But they're just miles more data on the US Tour, much easier to pick your players. And one of them tells us that Schwartzel is fifth of birdie average. So good form here at the course. Two top tens in his last three outings and a 14th the year before that. Had a good rest in the last couple of weeks while all this Ryder Cup nonsense has been going on. I think Charles Schwartzel is a good price at 25s.
Could be that same criticism you've levelled against the likes of Lowry and Willett could be levelled against Schwartzel. Maybe doesn't win as much as his talent suggests he should.
He's got a few wins to his name though, hasn't he? Certainly, I think in America you could argue that he's only had the one win, and in Europe, his wins have been more in South Africa on the European Tour, haven't they? But I guess that's a fair criticism, dude. But he's got that green jacket in his wardrobe that would belie that.
Absolutely. My second pick, I'm going for a guy that I picked a couple of weeks ago in Wales. Seve Benson is in my mind again at 150-1. Seve Benson, play him half a point each way. Tipped him up in the Wales Open at 100-1, and he played very solidly that week to finish 12th. I thought he was well worth another go at 150s, despite the stronger field. As I mentioned on the podcast last time, had a very good season last year with a host of top 10s. Is coming back from injury now. The negative, you can see the negative if you look through form at the Alfred Dunhill Links for the past 5 or 6 years. He's played here twice and missed the cut, but didn't play badly last year. Shot 7 under, only just missed the cut. I think he's a really talented player. Shot 66 on the Sunday at Celtic Manor. Pretty impressive performance there. I expect him to have another solid week. I just think he's over the odds at 150. So I'll put in Seve Benson as my second pick.
Fair dues, Dave. I'm going to go for Bernd Wiesberg as my second pick. Not got amazing course form. Missed the cut a couple of times until last year when he finished 12th. Which was obviously a much better return for this talented Austrian. He's in very decent form. He was 15th in the USPGA and since then has racked up 6th place in Italy, 13th in Switzerland and 12th in Wales. So he's definitely in good form. And he's the type of player who likes low-scoring events. All his best finishes are in events that are near 20-under events. So that's what really catches my eye about Wiesberger. His putting hasn't been wonderful this year. So he'll need to be at his best in that start. But of course, as we know with these players, they can turn it on with the flat stick pretty quickly once they get going. And Wiesberger, I fancy to go well this week. A very decent working man's price, 50-1, for his ability. There are players in the field who are probably not as good as him, who are a shorter price.
I'm sticking with a guy at 50s as well. I'm going with Mikko Ilonen as my third selection here at 50-1. Tied 7th at the USPGA Championship, was absolutely outstanding. Went on to finish tied 11th at the KLM Open on a Lynxy venue on his last start. I just think he's underrated. He's not a particularly fashionable name, I don't think, Mikko Ilonen. But he's won a couple of titles in the last 2 years now, winning at the Nordea Masters last year and the Irish Open this year. He likes these sort of conditions. It's going to be a bit cold, a bit windy, a bit wet, and he likes that. Made Sunday here in each of the last 7 years without really threatening Mikko Ilonen, and maybe this is the year he does. And I like that price at 50-1.
So he's my third pick. Mikko Ilonen. I almost wish I wasn't picking this guy because I've picked him a few times lately and he's let me down. Rafael Jacquelin is my final pick. He knew I was going
to
pick him.
Yeah, well, I thought, is he 125-1? He is.
Yeah, he was.
I thought he was 150s.
He was 150s. It was 150s when I picked him, and then I noticed there was a little price change, and I thought, oh, that's good news. but he's a good links player, Jacquelin. Yeah. He's been threatening to challenge him over the last few weeks. Needs to start well. Because he started with a 76 and he was dreadfully over a par in Wales on his last outing after a few holes, if you remember.
Yeah.
Betting slips in the paper in the
I can remember because I saw you thunder out of the office and look at me with that stern face. I thought, what the heck's happened here? Yeah. Check the European Tour leaderboard, Jacqueline just there, propping the rest up.
Yeah, it wasn't good, was he? He was 78 out of 78 starters at that time. But he actually ended up finishing 29th.
Yeah, he did come back, didn't he?
So his last three outings, 40th in the European Masters, 11th in the KLM and 29th in Wales, where, as we said, he's 76 in round one. Knows how to win on tour, got four victories to his name. A decent putter at his best, does light links. He's a little bit of a price play at 125s. I wish it was 150s. I agonise slightly about him, but he's just made it in as my outsider.
You'll hate my final selection.
Oh, let me guess.
I don't think you'd ever guess.
I hate them all anyway.
I know you do. I know every single week, Mike. I'm going with Padraig Harrington.
Oh, I do hate that.
As my no. my final selection. You don't try and get me with any free lunch bet on Harrington
come on.
This week. 150 to 1.
Did you have a free lunch bet on the Ryder Cup?
I think I've won it, Mike. I hate
did
to...
Did we have Fowler against
Kucher? I think Fowler... Did Fowler get three halves?
He did.
I think, and Kucher just got the
1 point.
1 point.
I don't believe it.
I'm glad this is being revealed right now on the podcast. That makes me feel even better.
Feel sick.
So we'll have to have one to level the match up.
Padraig Harrington versus Charles Fortson.
anyone you want at that price. 150 to 1, I'm going with Pod. I know it is a very, very speculative selection. He won this event in 2006 and 2002.
How long ago?
He's a two-time Open champion. He was on that Ryder Cup winning team last week. He still has designs on making the team in Hazeltine. He's not looking to go there as a captain in 2016. He finished 28th at the KLM Open, which was a little bit more like it for Pod.
Decent enough.
I think there's a chance he could have a big week. Obviously, he could completely bomb. But this is a guy that is... or was a world-class player. If you think that he's completely shot his bolt, you won't be backing him this week. If you think there's a glimmer of game left in him, a glimmer of ability left in him, 150 to 1 on golf courses that he loves, maybe this is the week that he comes back.
No, I've been slightly facetious. He's just so unpredictable, isn't he? But then again, at 150 to 1, what do you expect? So he's certainly a big price for someone who likes the courses so much. I'd love to see him come back, actually. You know, he's such a character.
It'd be good, wouldn't it? It would be good. That article that we've mentioned a couple of times on the podcast with Paul Kimmage when he interviewed Paul McGinley, and he was saying that his game was absolutely abysmal when they first all went out on tour together and went over to America, and he completely remodeled his game. And from this scratchy... left to right low ball flight that he had, he was hitting high towering draws all of a sudden, but still remarked how his short game always got him out of trouble, and that's what he built his career
absolutely.
On isn't it?
Unfortunately, for some reason, after winning a couple of majors, he decided
tinkered
and he's not come back, has he? So but good luck with that one, Dave. Who was close for you? Anyone else?
I've picked four players. I can't have that many more.
No, well, I noticed you said you were thinking of having bets in running. I was thinking, are there any left?
I'm going to play half a point each way on all four at the moment. Just small states because of the weather. Because I think it is a big factor here. Because if you do get the... you can get the bad end of the stick in this event. We've seen it loads of times before, haven't we, Mike?
Yeah, it can happen.
Where if you play Carnoustie and you get a couple of hours playing Carnoustie when it's dismal weather... the rain's coming in at you sideways. Mm. It can almost spoil your whole tournament in just a couple of hours. So I think the rain is a big factor.
Yep.
Only players that you mentioned, really, that I liked but were short enough in the betting. I thought you might have gone for Simon Dyson.
He was on my longer list. I was slightly concerned about him withdrawing, though, the other week with a back injury, I think it was, wasn't it? He has got good course form, and I have picked him lately. No, I could leave him on that injury. And he's what price is Dyson at?
He's 40 to 1, Dyson.
Not the worst bet in the field by any means. What about Eduardo Molinari? Didn't want to put him in after...
No, he played well the other day at 40 to... He did play well, didn't he? Tied third or tied second in the end?
Sweaty moments having criticised him.
Rated him on Twitter.
Yeah,
he was close. I just wonder about... I wonder about the putting a little bit with Eduardo Molinari at the moment. Didn't hold his fair share
you've got to
do that. Texan Ryan Palmer. He plays really well in the wind, doesn't he?
He
Ryan Palmer. And he had some quality form in the FedEx Cup Series.
And he's a good putter, yeah. Another American, Brooks Koepka. This could be the type of event that suits him down to the ground. So, and he's in decent form as well. I'll be fascinated to see how Louis Oosthuizen plays.
Yeah. We've always got a watching brief with him, haven't we?
He's just so injury prone, isn't he? You don't know whether you're going to get a run for your money, but he's got so much ability, you know, that 50-1 would be massive if he was on his game. Lowry, as I say, was someone I thought I'd be picking, but not at 25s. I was really disappointed with that price. So other than that, it was the ones that we've gone for, yeah. And, I think there'll be some people steeping into Rory, though, won't there, at 9-2?
Yeah, I can see that. It is a little bit of a risk this week, isn't it, given that they've come off the Ryder Cup.
I think so.
He played all 5 matches at the Ryder Cup as well.
Fair point.
It's got to be factored in. But he showed his unquestionable class with that performance against Ricky Fowler on Sunday. I mean, that was the... we've talked about Rose and Stenson forming that brilliant partnership, but his golf on Sunday against Ricky Fowler towards the top of the order was just immaculate for the first 10-12 holes.
Tremendous player, but Rose was tremendous though, Dave, wasn't he?
Yeah.
For our bet.
Loved that.
He was fantastic, wasn't he?
He's a ready-made future Ryder Cup captain, isn't he? He's just got the temperament. Is there anyone that dislikes Justin Rose?
Never heard
anyone say a bad word about him.
A lot of bottle, I think, these days as well. He really, you know, puts well under pressure, doesn't he? So he's really come on leaps and bounds over the last few years as Justin Rose. Yeah. Who was your best American player?
Patrick Reed.
Yeah, I
loved watching him play. I loved how boisterous he was in that final Sunday match against Henrik Stenson.
He had a bit of bottle, hadn't he? A bit of chutzpah.
Definitely, that's the word actually. Chutzpah, I like that. And he got criticised on Twitter, and I couldn't believe it. That's what you want to see in the Ryder Cup, isn't it?
Yeah. That probably means he's all right. If he gets criticised on Twitter, it means he's done all right.
Free lunch bet, Mike.
Oh, God.
We'll recap the selections in just a second's time. And Mark had said, remember, his pick is Eddie Pepperell here. Yeah. But let's go double or quit. So we won't worry about the lunch this week. We'll go double or quit
double
someone.
Or quits.
Do you want to suggest one or do you want me to suggest one?
Danny Willett versus... Oh, no, he's not.
What about Mikko Ilonen versus Bernd Wiesberger?
Go on
at the same price.
Yes.
Both 50-1.
Yeah, both same price. That's fair.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the free lunch bet.
I never win those. I'll have to set up a direct debit.
Do you want to recap your picks for this Alfred Dunhill Links?
Yeah, and the player you don't want to win?
The player I don't want to win.
Lowry
for me. Tough one. Lowry for you. Stephen Gallagher for me.
He will win. Don't worry.
40-1. Good.
He will win. He'll miss the cut. Don't you think?
No,
he'll be depressed.
I think he'll work two ways. He'll be that deflated, or he'll think I've got a point
happy,
to prove.
Sad,
here.
Happy, sad. He won't know what he's thinking.
No,
really.
He won't. Emotional turmoil for Stephen Gallagher.
Inner turmoil for Stephen Gallagher, the millionaire. Charles Fartzell is my first pick at 25-1.
Yeah,
all a point each way. These Bernd Wiesberger at 50s and Raphael Jacquelin. Well, does he deserve a point each way? Oh, I don't know about that. Go on, let's go for it at 125.
I'm going half a point each way on 4 picks here. Danny Willett, 40-1. Mikko Ilonen, 50-1. Seve Benson at 150-1. And Padraig Harrington at 150-1 as well. Should be a fun week. I'm looking forward to this week. Lots of coverage on the television, albeit not always of the professionals, but lots of top quality golf and top quality names in action as well. Rory McIlroy heading the betting at 9-2 for the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship. Hope you've enjoyed the show, folks, and myself and Mike available on Twitter at D Kellner and at M Grenham. Drop us a tweet if you've got any fancies, and we'll speak again next week. It's been a pleasure. See you soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.